This episode of the KunzerCast is sponsored by the Congress for the New Urbanism. Every year, the Congress for the New Urbanism throws an event that brings together the top thinkers and thought leaders working in the urbanist realm. Plan Edison has called the Congress a living, breathing forum, where all forms of urbanist thought come to be dissected, discussed, and applied into making our communities vibrant, dynamic places. Join CNU in West Palm Beach, Florida this May 9 through 12 for the 20th anniversary event of the Congress for the New Urbanism. Confirmed speakers include Richard Florida, sprawl repair manual author Galina Tachieva, retail guru Robert Gibbs, fighting traffic author Peter Norton, Peter Calthorpe, Liz Platter-Zyberg, Jaime Correa, Andres Duany, and many more speakers being added every day. To take advantage of early registration rates, visit cnu20.org and register now. Hey everyone, it's Duncan Crary. You're listening to the KunzerCast, a weekly conversation about the tragicomedy of suburban sprawl featuring James Howard Kunstler. Jim is the author of The Long Emergency, The Geography of Nowhere, and The World Made by Hand Novels. So Jim, the Congress for the New Urbanism is sponsoring this program again, and they're trying to encourage listeners to register early for the CNU 20 in West Palm Beach.
The CNU is an event that's always worth attending.
Yeah.
You'll meet some wonderful people and some of the sort of brightest lights capable of reimagining how we're going to live in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And people who I think are doing it pretty well.
Now, I went last year by myself. Well, I was traveling with Matt Dellinger, another author. You were not able to make it that year, but you've been to...
I was grinding out the book that I wrote last year, and I was really grinding.
But you do...
Yeah, it's only the second one I've missed in 20 years.
Mm. And the organization formed the year that you published...
The Geography of Nowhere.
Yeah, so they...
It was a coincidence.
Right.
But it was a fortuitous one. And it put me in touch with a whole cohort of people who I think are among the best in the nation at actually providing some insight into how we're going to organize our lives in the years ahead. And it's going to be different. You know, the suburban project's over, and we're moving on to the next thing.
And you're going to be giving a talk during the event. You're not going to be one of the keynote speakers, but you will be...
I think they've got me on a couple of panels.
Yeah.
One I know is about writing about the new urbanism, and I don't know if hearing writers talk about writing is all that thrilling, but we'll see what we all have to say about it. And I have enough to say about it myself, but it remains to be seen if that will thrill other people.
Yeah. I plan to be attending... The CNU this year, and I was asked, to appear on one of the panels I think that you're going to be on. But, you know, we'll see. But listeners, Jim and I are most likely, Jim will definitely be there, and I may be there at CNU 20, so that's another reason among many why you should register early. So, Jim, I have a question along these lines. Speaking of new urbanism, I know I have to submit the corrections that, you know, any typos that... I discovered in the printed version of the KunzerCast book, you know, like for the second printing, if there ever is one. I noticed one right on the title page, and it was not my fault. The tagline of the book is The Tragic Comedy of Suburban Sprawl, but, you know, somebody made a mistake there at the publisher, and he wrote the tagline is The Tragic Comedy of Urban Sprawl. Now, people use these terms interchangeably, and I think it might have to do with what country you live in, too, because I think they might call it urban sprawl. And
I think it's a kind of an amorphous concept that, look, one of the main consequences of the suburban adventure has been to disrupt and confuse our idea of how the landscape is organized. So it's not surprising that in our attempts to articulate it on the page, that it sometimes comes out funny. You know, it sometimes comes out in a way that seems like we don't understand what we're talking about. But
okay, so Jim, I think this, you know, interchanging the terms suburban sprawl and urban sprawl, you know, although it exists out there, they're two different things. Urbanism and suburbanism are two different things. I've seen pictures of urban sprawl, or what I would call urban sprawl, in the third world. We just have this relentless urban organism growing out of control, right?
That's, I think, more a phenomenon of, you know, the population bomb thing,
right,
where, you know, after the year 1900, the population just grows and grows and grows and grows.
Yeah.
And you get all these places that used to be villages in the third world are now turning into cities of 5 million people with relentlessly expanding slums.
Yeah.
That's kind of different from what you get in the western sprawling suburbs of Chicago.
Which would be what? Relentless?
Well, I mean, it is a function of a growing population, but it's also a function of a fossil fuel economy.
Yeah.
And the disposition on the land of how that works.
Yeah. But in other words, you still have a building type that's sprawling out of the landscape, but it's
It's a pattern. It's not necessarily a building type. It's a template or a development pattern.
Yeah.
And so the development pattern of a shanty town at the edge of Lagos, Nigeria, is not the same as the development pattern in Schaumburg, Illinois,
you know,
25 miles west of Chicago.
Right. And Schaumburg would include Schaumburg's sprawl would include the wasting of vast amounts of space, right? Because it's all in the
Well, it's not dense. By definition, it's, you know, it's all spread out according to a highway network.
Yeah. Okay. So with that being said, Jim, I want to talk to you about the term urban.
Yeah.
And what it actually means, because I get into discussions with people and I use the term urban, and it can be very confusing out there.
It's totally confusing.
But we could maybe help clarify some.
Well, for one thing, over the last 30-odd years, it's come to take the place of the word black or African-American. So that's one point of confusion where, you know, you say anything urban and all of a sudden it relates to an ethnic group.
So-called black culture, yes. Or even so-called poor culture as well.
Yeah. But we can dispense with that because, that's not what we're talking about.
Right. And we've done that before on the show.
Yeah. We're talking about really the physical form of the human imprint on the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And the urban form, which the new urbanists have a way of thinking about it. It's called the transect. And the transect is a declension of conditions that you find in the landscape going from the most urban to the least urban, mm-hmm. from the most dense to the least dense, from the built-up center of large buildings to the wilderness, and everything in between, including the neighborhoods of apartments, the neighborhoods of single-family houses, the business districts, the farm districts, the pastoral districts, and then, you know, the wild districts. It's a very fine, rich hierarchy or declension along a spectrum of conditions. And I think that it's a good way of understanding the landscape. It's not particularly, you know, a cultural or economic way of understanding it. It's, a way of understanding it in terms of built form.
Yeah, I've seen this image in Andre Stuani's newest book. I think the image has been kicking around. It's a diagram that illustrates the transect.
There are many diagrams of it. To some extent, it is a schematic idea. To some extent, it's an idea that was proposed because we would wish the landscape to be more clearly organized that way,
right,
rather than to be just a muddle of suburban ambiguity,
right,
which in America it mostly is.
Right.
You know, part of the idea of the transect is that under the best conditions, the landscape can be understood and read in terms of distinct parts. And that's exactly what suburbia destroyed, you know, until everything became one big sort of mishmash.
Okay, so when we use the term urban, we're talking about a way of delivering a building pattern in a community, and it can occur at different scales. But when people hear urban, a lot of Americans just think of mega cities like New York City or Chicago or Los Angeles. They only associate urban with big cities. But you could really describe a block in the village that you live in, which is a very rural village,
as 5,000 people.
And
sure.
The main street of your village is urbanism, right? It's urban.
Of course, you can typologically understand it as a kind of assemblage of an ensemble of things
that
can be identified clearly.
Right.
You know, basically 2- and 3-story buildings that stand shoulder to shoulder along a corridor. And we understand that. But like so many things in our culture right now, the confusion over what's urban and what's not urban is like many things in our culture right now, muddled. We're having a hard time talking about anything, whether it's where the economy is going or what kind of culture we would like to be or how we're going to conduct ourselves on the planet among other groups of people.
Mm.
You know, all these conversations are muddled, how we're going to deal with the vagaries of climate, how we're going to deal with the destruction of the ecology of animals and humans. You know, all these things are, we're not having a very successful conversation about any of these things. And I think the great virtue of the new urbanists was that they were so careful to be precise about what they were talking about. So they wanted to remove as much ambiguity from these discussions as possible, because that was one of the things that was producing such a terrible outcome for America, was the fact that so many Americans just couldn't even articulate what it was about their home places that they were losing or that they wanted to get back or retain.
Yeah. Well, when I get into these conversations in my own life, I find that I have to define terms as I go, or I have to almost define them before we get started in the conversation.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, if you want to have a discussion about the revitalization of Troy, we need to first define a couple words, like what urban means.
Sure.
You know, because I don't want to be halfway through this conversation and realize that.
Well, in the early years of the new urbanism, I know Andres Duany was very preoccupied with the whole idea of compiling a lexicon. And a lexicon is a set of definitions and descriptions of things and conditions. And the whole purpose of the lexicon was so that there would be some agreement about what we were talking about, so that the terms would be clearly identifiable.
Yeah.
And I think that preoccupation with the lexicon of the new urbanism has continued in a very beneficial way, so that that group of people is always very careful to talk about things specifically and precisely, mm-hmm. in a way that the audience will understand. I mean, they were, for so many years, in the whole charrette process, the whole public meeting process and the planning boards, et cetera, you know, constantly grappling with other people who really didn't understand the terms of the discussion.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they would have to go through, just to begin a discussion, you'd have to spend, you know, the first quarter of it defining the terms so that people understood what it was about.
Yeah, well, and along those lines, it's interesting, there's this accusation of elitism that always springs up, too, whenever I hear discussions around here about urbanism.
And well, it's more muddling. You know, it's more muddling of people's economic discontents, especially the discontents of wealthy, successful progressives in academia, you know, who for one reason or another feel guilty about where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another thing that we're not capable of being clear about.
Well, like, so, for example, on the podcast recently, you tossed off a pretty funny comment about how the grocery shopping options for me in my neighborhood in downtown Troy are the equivalent of like medieval.
Yeah, you have to go to some pushcart vendor, you know, to get your stuff because there's no stores left.
To get groceries. Yeah, there's no stores left in the downtown area. And a local newspaper writer thought it was funny, put it up on the newspaper blog. And then, of course, all the readers start posting comments. And, you know, one of the comments was, this is typical of what happens all the time. One of the comments was equating you and I to advocating for, you know, an East Village in Troy, New York, just because we were saying that there ought to be a place you can buy fresh groceries in downtown on foot. That makes you some, you know, elitist, you know, New York City jerk.
Well, frankly, I have no idea what they meant by, you know, an East Village type of, I mean, what does that mean? That we're going to have punk music bars or I have no idea what they mean by that.
I just think that they think that New York City represents urbanism.
Mm-hmm.
And
ergo, and the urbanism is about the East Village. And what is the East Village about?
It's just about people crammed in like sardines.
Well, that's, oh, are they thinking of the Lower East Side in 1911? That's different. Because that's not what the Lower East Side is now.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Well, it just shows people don't know what the fuck they're talking about. So,
but,
you know.
But I also think, like, we were started with a premise that just you ought to be able to have a grocery store.
Yeah.
And then you get accused of trying to turn Troy, New York, into New York City.
Well, since one of my cardinal beliefs is that you can't overestimate people's capacity to misunderstand each other.
Yeah.
Or you can't overstate the perversity of human interaction, mm-hmm. and discourse, that, you know, if you put anything out there, there's always the chance that it's going to be misunderstood. But right now, in particular, in this time, in our time, it's almost guaranteed it'll be misunderstood because we have no agreement about the terms of what we're talking about. So this is a very tough time for Americans to talk about anything, whether it's urbanism or sports.
Yeah. Well, I also just, another thing that comes up and with this elitist accusation is when you advocate for something to be walkable, like good walkable urban fabric, you get accused of being an elitist. Like, when did walking become an elite activity?
Well, my guess is that, you know, it all comes from the fact that for most people, driving around to the strip mall is normal.
Yeah.
And anything that departs from that is, you know, a specialized group of people.
Yeah, but it's...
So...
And it's straight... I mean, I was thinking about this, and I drew the same conclusion that you're articulating.
I mean, it's one of the things that... It's something that tells me that a huge political problem for us will be the defense of the driving and suburban template at all costs,
mm-hmm.
which I call the, you know, the program of sustaining the unsustainable. The campaign to do that.
Yeah.
And because that way of life is now so normal that there's no question that people are going to, you know, we're going to squander our resources defending it and trying to prop it up.
Yeah, well, it's funny in this discussion about urbanism that you get, you sort of get a double whammy where people sometimes use the term urban to mean, you know, that's the place where the poor people live.
Mm-hmm.
To also being anyone who's advocating for improving the urban condition is an elitist because, you know, they want to be able to walk places. And of course,
it's also very true that in many American cities today, the normal condition is for it to be inhabited only by either very rich people or very poor people, where the middle class are all in the asteroid belts of suburbia outside of it. So, sure. You know, you would naturally end up with that misunderstanding that you're either talking about somebody with a high tech job walking around Soho, you know, who lives in a $750,000 one bedroom apartment and eats in restaurants every night. You know, that certainly is an effete image of how to live.
Mm.
You know, or somebody living in you know, a horrible slum on public assistance and, you know, with 17 illegitimate kids around the neighborhood. So, yeah, sure. More than half the people in America live in the burbs, and most American cities are organized economically for either the very rich or the very poor.
Mm. And if you... Well, everyone likes to call themselves middle class in this country. We have a middle class that's, you know, 98% of the population calls themselves middle class, but
we also don't have much experience left of that middle class being in an urban setting. So you know, the cultural memory of it is fading away generation by generation.
Yeah. So if you are a middle, I guess what I was trying to get to is if you are a middle class person trying to live in an urban setting and advocate for good urbanism, the rest of the middle class living out in suburbia doesn't know how to handle you. So you must be an elitist, you know?
No, I think that the cultural memory for them has been erased, especially when you're talking about the current generation. You know, it's been several generations now since those people have inhabited the city. So mm-hmm. They certainly don't apprehend any of its benefits.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Jim, it was fun chatting with you about terminology.
Well, I hope you get down there to West Palm Beach, and I think it'll be a good meeting. It is kind of a crucial time in American history in terms of how we're going to organize life on the ground, on the terrain of North America, and whether we're going to successfully make some changes between our the habits that have the economic habits and behaviors that have gotten us into trouble, and the ones that will provide some amenity and economic security for us in the future.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to going down there and learning new terms and, you know, coming. I went down there last year. I listened to what a lot of the people had to say, and I came back to my hometown, and I felt better equipped to be able to discuss these issues in my community. You know?
Good. Well, and we'll be better equipped to have this discussion here in front of the microphone.
But we also have the magic of editing, Jim.
That's true. Thank God. Thank you, Jesus.
All right, see ya. You've been listening to the Kunstler Cast featuring James Howard Kunstler. To leave a listener comment, call toll-free at 866-924-9499. Send email to letters@kunstlercast.com. You can listen to all of our past programs, join our email list, find out how to book Jim to speak in your area, and talk about the show with other listeners at kunstlercast.com. I'm your host, Duncan Crary. Thanks for listening.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.